This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey listeners, Ash here. Just wanted to give a little heads up that I forgot to turn my AC off before we started recording, so it will sound a little bit funky on my end for the first few minutes, but I promise you it does not last the entire episode. I did try my best in editing to make it go away, but I am not perfect at editing, so I do apologize. Happy listening!
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What's going on, Katie?
You know, I'm really busy right now, y'all. Patrons, I'm so sorry that we're like behind on shit. I'm just so stupidly busy. It's insane.
And Katie is the one that has the editing capabilities for the longer episodes.
Yes, the video editing. That's on my computer. So I apologize, y'all. I'm trying.
Yeah, I can only do the short form videos that we post on social media.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
Yeah, school's been crazy for you, but you're doing very well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm very happy with how school is going. Yeah, what about you? What do you have going on?
We just got through the primary, so now we're really going into the general campaign season.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, on the 22nd, we have our campaign kickoff fundraiser, so I'm excited about that. This weekend, we have a cornhole event at work. Ooh. A cornhole tournament with a tricky tray to raise money for the Somerville Fire Department.
Hell yeah.
I'm excited for that. That'll be fun. I finally roped one of my coworkers into being my cornhole partner. I would ask Dan, but Dan is at an anime convention this whole weekend, so cannot be my partner.
Damn.
But it should be fun. I'm excited for it. I just feel like a lot of campaign stuff is going to start to come up. We got to start canvassing and everything.
Yeah.
We just kind of like nailed down what our signs and our walk cards and all this stuff are going to look like. So it's kind of going from like planning into like full action.
Damn. It's time, my dude. I get it. Well, hell yeah. Well, that's all I've got if you want to just get on into it.
Sure.
Well, y'all, it's fucking Pride Month, and I think we all know why this year feels really, really different. I've been looking for some really solid queer history, but nothing felt quite right. I wanted to find a part of our history that kind of mimicked what was going on right now. We have state laws coming for the throats of our community, and we have millions of Americans actively ignoring that fact. We have celebrities who we've uplifted staying silent and breaking ties with the queer community. And fortunately, through all of this darkness, we will always have Elliot Page, Lizzo, Harry Styles, and Dylan Mulvaney. However, today we take a deep dive into a rough time for the queer community and also an important one. We're going to talk about the first ever trans clinic and the doctor who founded it, Magnus Hirschfeld. Because y'all know I love to keep shit chronological, we're gonna start up top with kind of his lifelong theories. I feel like normally I would wait until we're like in the episode, but it's really important to understand what he believed because he still was a cis white dude, and that lens is not lost in all of his beliefs. He fully believed that same-sex attraction was inborn or an innate. Baby, you're born this way. He also believed that your sexuality doesn't have any moral impact on your character. You can be a good person and gay, and you can be a bad person and straight. They're not connected. He focused on what he called the doctrine of sexual intermediaries, meaning he believed that there was a wide variety of genders. Quote, between which there are no empty points present, but rather unbroken connecting lines. He was the first person in recorded history to say that there's no such thing as a gender binary, or a true man or woman. We're all a mix of both, and it varies between everyone. He talked about how sexuality and gender are on a continuum, and each person's sexuality is unique to them and them only, and how it can also change over the course of your lifetime. He was one of the first people to propose that gender and sexuality are not necessarily the same thing. And of course, he, like many scientists at his time, were really looking into the eugenics of it all. We really need to pause for a second, because I'm not trying to say that he was trying to figure out a way to breed gayness out of people. He was trying to understand the connection between genetics and being gay. is that inherently harmful and going to be used for some really bad shit later? Yeah, it absolutely is. Am I trying to excuse it? No. He wanted to sterilize alcoholics. He said, it's not your fault you're an alcoholic, it runs in your genes, but you can't make any more of you. He felt the same way for people with mental disabilities, and he held a lot of anti-Black racist beliefs. Magnus was a layered and complicated man, but still a really important figure in queer history. A lot of times in these conversations, we forget about the intersectionality of it all, and we uplift people who also held really harmful beliefs. And I needed to say it up front before we got into any of the amazing stuff that he did, because he's a complicated person, like we all are. So, on to his early life and education. Magnus was born May 14th, 1868.
Wow.
That's how old these beliefs go back. Even further, but like, these are not new concepts. He was born to a large Jewish family in modern-day Poland. His dad was a doctor in their community and was beloved by everyone. He attended Kolberg Cathedral School, which at the time was a Protestant school, but he was from a very conservative Jewish family, which did not go well when he was from an early age, really interested in sex from a scientific and natural standpoint. His dad passed away when Magnus was 17, and it had a profound impact on him. The community actually ended up erecting a statue of Magnus's dad in town because he was, like, that beloved by the town. Unfortunately, that statue would later be torn down by the Nazis when they rose to power. As a teenager, Magnus joined a social democratic group. He wasn't super involved in the day-to-day, but it's starting to highlight his interest in equality and politics. Once again, when the Nazis rose to power, this political group was outlawed. After graduating in 1888, he moved on to medical school, where he was faced with one of the most horrific things he'd experienced in his life up until that point. While attending a lecture for school, he learned the topic was sexual degeneracy. In Germany in 1888, I'm sure you have an idea of how bad that was. I know when I first read that, I was like, oh fuck, it had to be horrible. But nothing prepared me for what happened during the lecture. A fully nude man was brought before the class. He had been imprisoned in an insane asylum for the last 30 years, strictly for being gay.
Fuck.
The other aspect of this horror was that Magnus seemed to be the only one in the room who was upset or bothered by what was happening. Even his best friend thought that what was happening was totally morally fine.
How fucked up do you have to be?
Right? They literally were just, like, bending him over and examining his body and, like, talking about how he was a sexual degenerate for being gay. Like, it was fucking horrible. At this point, being gay was fully illegal. The German Penal Code, paragraph 175, outlawed relationships between the same genders as well as bestiality. Which, linking the two in one law is such a disgusting fucking tactic. Like, fuck that.
Yeah.
That's its own issue.
That's the same, since we're talking about how this relates to today, that's the same as all these fucking right-wing Republicans being like, oh, gay people and sexual predators or drag queens are predators, and linking it to fucking pedophilia. Like, go fuck yourselves. Ugh.
Yeah, it's so fucking gross. After this, he moved around schools until he graduated with his doctorate in 1892 in Berlin. For 8 months, he traveled around the world, including the U.S., and spent a decent amount of time in Chicago, and fell in love with the gay subculture there. He also noticed how extremely similar it was to Berlin, and that, from a scientific standpoint, was very interesting to him, because it shows that it doesn't just pop up in specific cultures. The culture is similarly everywhere. Hirschfeld's early work as a physician focused on natural remedies and preventative medicine, which was pretty rare at this time. Not a lot of doctors were looking into that. And for a while, that was his main focus. I don't have the exact date for the event, but one night, a soldier found his way to Hirschfeld in the evening of 1986. Depressed and freaking out, the man had come to confess himself as a, quote, an earning, which was the term they used for gay men at the time. While Magnus hadn't put it to that term quite yet, he understood the feelings because he was also a gay man. He attempted to comfort him, but when being gay can get you stripped of everything and thrown in jail, there's really not much that you can do to feel hopeful. The soldier was on the eve of his wedding day. He was looking at a life filled with hiding, forced straight sex with his wife, and the constant fear of being found out. In every scenario, this is jail for everyone. The poor woman he's going to marry is going to be constantly trying to please him and never feel good enough. And she'll never be able to because he's gay. And he's going to feel the exact same way. Hirschfield urged the man to come talk with him in the morning after getting some sleep. But regardless of how long they talked, the soldier left and ended up taking his own life. From the Scientific American's website, quote, the soldier bequeathed his private papers to Hirschfield, along with a letter. Quote, the thought that you could contribute to a future when the German fatherland will think of us in more than terms just sweetens the hour of death. End quote. The soldier called himself a curse, fit only to die because of the expectations of heterosexual norms, reinforced by marriage and law, made no room for his kind. This death haunted Hirschfield for the rest of his life. That same year, under a pseudonym, he published a pamphlet called Sappho and Socrates about, quote, homosexual love, trying to normalize the concept through education. He, like, made a deal with his publisher that was like, yeah, like, you know, don't put my name on it. But if someone asks who did it, tell them it was me. And people came and were like, hey, who wrote this? And it ended up being people who were looking for a community. And they found it within Hirschfield. All of those people finding each other led to the next venture that made huge movements for the LGBTQ community. The pamphlet didn't change the population's mind, but it did help Hirschfield find a community. And with that, he opened the Scientific Humanitarian Committee, founded in May 15th, 1897 in Berlin, Germany, with the publisher Max Fohr, lawyer Edward Oberg, and writer Franz Joseph von Bülow. This is the greatest fucking thing I've ever heard. Their slogan was justice through science.
Nice.
Or through science to justice. I love that so much. And the entire idea was educating people on science and the science behind homosexuality would lead to people being more open with it. It's 1897. Band-Aids haven't been fucking invented. And we have a whole designated committee to understanding this idea. People, like, love to talk about the past, about, like, how Titan people were all against this. It was there. This entire community, this history was all there. And these beliefs have existed. And I'm, like, speaking specifically to transphobic queer people. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Right?
Really?
People didn't know back then as much as they know now because we're way more connected now through the internet. Like, of course you're going to see it more now. You know, you were closed off to it before, so you thought that it didn't exist. Like, it fucking existed.
It did. One of their main focuses was repealing the Penal Code 175. And under Hirschfield's leadership, the Scientific Humanitarian Committee gathered 6,000 signatures from prominent Germans on a petition to overturn it. Even our boy Albert Einstein signed it.
Nice.
Ally! Unfortunately, this didn't have its intended outcome either. Not only was it rejected, but it put the group under intense surveillance that led to harassment.
Of course it did.
Gay rights weren't the only thing that Hirschfield was speaking out about. He was also talking about wanting to make it easier for women to divorce their shitty husbands, contraceptives, abortions, sex education, and a woman's right to education in general.
Wow. Okay.
Right? The list of the things that Hirschfield spoke out also included the subject of suicide. He was the first person to present statistical evidence that gay men were more likely to commit suicide or attempt suicide versus heterosexuals. Hirschfield prepared questionnaires that gay men could answer anonymously about homosexuality and suicide. Collating his results, Hirschfield estimated that 3 out of every 100 gays committed suicide every year, a quarter of them attempted suicide at some point in their lives, and the other 3/4 had suicidal thoughts. Like, he was begging the people around him to be like, this, your beliefs are actively killing our fellow Germans, trying to like get people to give a shit. And it's so frustrating how hard he was trying and how little people were listening. As time went on, his research also went on, and he realized that there was a lot more to sexuality and gender than just gay and straight or man and woman. Quote, some people are born with a nature that differs from that of their assigned sex, but it isn't an expression of homosexuality, because some of these people are heterosexual, end quote. He's literally talking about trans people. He's like, yeah, this is the thing that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a chance that if some of these people he was studying were born today, they might use that term, transgender. The term that Hirschfield and the community at the time used to talk about anyone who lived outside of the gender binary was transvestite.
Okay.
It's an outdated term for us now, but I needed to point that out because in 1910, he had written a book, Die Transvestiten, and it was one of the first books to include biographies of trans individuals.
Wow.
And he was just like, hey, guess what? These people exist.
Mm-hmm.
And while the penal code didn't specifically mention what they called cross-dressing or transvestites, quote unquote, a lot of cops would still harass these people that they suspected of doing that under code 175.
They called it
like disturbing the peace and shit. Hirschfield acknowledged that this was ridiculous and genuinely went to them and was like, who is this hurting by them doing this? It's not causing you active harm. So he campaigned to make it legal and made somewhat of a movement. I feel weird saying that. Just hold on. What were called transvestite passes were made. So people could get these passes. So if police or someone came up to them and were harassing them about what they were doing, they could show this pass and be like, I have permission to do this. And they would be free from harm.
Interesting.
Now, the police are issuing passes to protect you from the police. It's fucking gross.
Almost feels like giving somebody a Star of David to put on their arm.
That's the other thing. Making lists of people in Germany who are different is not great.
Yeah, don't love that, especially because it's the police doing it and they're the problem to begin with.
Yeah. The pass essentially said, like, I am not cross-dressing for nefarious purposes. I am not a danger. And it allowed trans people and cross-dressers to openly exist in their identities in public without getting harassed.
I am. But it's also
like icky. That's why, yeah. I was like, it was like kind of a movement, but like it feels weird.
Because the whole basis of it still stems from immediately and automatically thinking that trans people are nefarious.
Exactly.
That's what it's based off of. Yeah.
ACAB, baby, you know?
All the time.
It's 1913, and it's a pretty big point in medicine. And when I say that, I mean it's... Eugenics has come to ruin the goddamn party. So Hirschfield in 1913 gets involved and opens up the Medical Society for Sexology and Eugenics. Not a lot comes with that because the next year, World War I starts. But it has to be mentioned that he was like, what are these eugenics things here? He wasn't safe from the shittiness of that time.
Mm-hmm.
World War I put a stop to everything for a little while, except for gay sex. I mean, wow. Did a lot of dudes really explore their sexuality during the war? I mean, it's like a whole... There are research papers about, like, gay sex and World War I. I had no fucking idea. I had no idea.
Are we talking about, like, within the soldiers that were at war?
With the soldiers at war... with women at home, just like everyone's doing gay shit.
Do gay shit.
Absolutely. Sounds gay. I'm in. The gay men who survived the war and came back were ready to demand some fucking equality under the law.
Hell yeah.
They had lived their life with labels like degenerates, unrespectables, effeminate, often associated with them. But these motherfuckers just fought in World War I for their fatherland and survived. And they were pissed.
As they should be.
As they fucking should be. 1919 is the next venture for Magnus Hirschfeld. He opens up the Institute for Sexual Research. This is 30 years before Kinsey of the Kinsey Scale opened his institute, for the record. Everyone's always talking about the Kinsey Scale, but this gay Jewish man said it first. Doctors from all over the world would travel to Hirschfeld to learn from them, like him and all of the people that he employed. They would do this thing where they would take questions anonymously, like in a little question box, and then answer them at publicly pre-planned events. And these were so popular to the point where it would be like, they like sold out. Like people, it was like standing room only. People are filling the room just trying to fucking learn.
Wow.
That's because amazing. People are like, hey, so like, how do people get pregnant? Like, they don't know any of this shit. They don't know any of this.
We should know the basics of this stuff. Well, that feels very accurate to today, too.
A lot of times people love to separate all of the medical knowledge that we gain from disgusting practices of Nazis. And a lot of that includes what we learned about pregnancy. Like, a lot of medical information comes directly from the Nazis torturing Jewish people.
Jesus Christ.
So a lot of people are like, what do you mean we didn't know that? The Holocaust hadn't happened yet. These people hadn't been tortured and that knowledge hadn't been learned yet. It's disgusting how interlinked anti-Semitism and racism is in our medical field. Mm-hmm. It's really gross. From the online Holocaust Encyclopedia, they provided treatments for a range of issues related to sex, such as STDs, unwanted pregnancies, and even erectile dysfunction. Hirschfeld himself specialized in helping those seeking assistance as they navigated their sexuality or gender identities. He also offered advice on pursuing same-sex relationships. He provided this help at a time when sexual relations between men were against the law. Hirschfeld and other staff also helped develop some of the earliest modern gender affirmation surgeries. It is because of Magnus Hirschfeld himself that we have hormone therapies. He was mm-hmm. the one who was extracting hormones and making it consumable for humans.
Ooh, interesting.
Their institute was the first to work on what we would call laser hair removal. And the first facial feminization and masculinization surgeries.
Oh, cool.
They were also the, like, one of the doctors that he had there was the first person to work on bottom surgeries and top surgeries.
Oh, shit.
That came out of this institute.
Wow.
They also stored a large amount of historical sex objects and showcased them as a way to try to explain to people that none of these identities are new. They had mm-hmm. sex toys from, like, ancient Greece. This is not a new thing.
And we all know how they were back in ancient Greece. They'd be fucking.
All the time. Unfortunately, this was not perceived well by all. He was targeted by hate groups. At one point, he was beaten to the point of almost death. And when the press covered it, they said the aggressors should have crushed his skull. Regardless, he continued his work and his life happily. Magnus lived in an apartment above the Institute with his partner, Carl Geiss, who worked for the Institute's library and museum. And 1924 to 1929 was a golden age for the Berlin queer community, with 80 gay bars and 50 lesbian bars within the capital alone.
Yes.
People who were coming to his institute and receiving gender-affirming surgeries would then be hired to work for the institute. That's so that they awesome. Were still having jobs and working, and just they had a full fucking community for
I love that.
A gorgeous 5 years. Having achieved so much success and forward momentum, Hirschfeld placed Geiss in charge of the Sexual Institute of Science in 1930 and left Germany for a global lecture tour. He traveled to the United States, Japan, China, the Philippines, Indonesia, India, Egypt, and Palestine. He was ready to come back to Germany in 1932, but Germany wasn't necessarily a great place for a gay Jewish man in 1932.
You could say that again.
When he got back to Europe, he started getting threats about not returning fully back to Germany. The Nazi regime was on the rise, and their Nazi propagandists had used him specifically as a prime example of what they called degenerate Jewish sexuality.
Oh, they can go fuck themselves.
Right? Hirschfeld settled in Switzerland shortly before Hitler was appointed as chancellor in 1933. He made his recorded reaction of being forced into exile. Quote, "If Germany doesn't want me, I don't want it either." End quote.
Damn.
On May 6, 1933, a Nazi student group marched to the Institute for Sexual Silence in Berlin. Karl escaped with his life and what little he could bring with him before the members of the paramilitary group ransacked the institute, looted its library and archives. Days later, the stolen books, artifacts, and clinical files were destroyed in one of the several public book burnings organized by Nazis. A tower-like bonfire engulfed more than 20,000 books, some of them rare copies that have helped provide the historiography for gender non-conforming people. This is one of the largest book burnings the Nazis ever participated in. A bust of Hirschfeld was paraded through the streets on a stick before being thrown into the bonfire.
What the fuck?
Within months of this, Nazis authorities forced the institute to be closed.
You know, only a sick person would make an effigy of someone and then fucking burn it.
It was a statue that was in, like, it was created in honor of him in the institute. And they took it from the institute and burned it.
Wow.
So, like, it's worse. They took something that was supposed to be, like, an act of love from one of his clients and destroyed it.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Magnus never returned to Germany. Him and Karl met in Paris, where they hoped to reopen the institute, until the threat of Nazi rule came there as well, and they fled to Nice for its warm climate.
Ugh. I love Nice.
Hirschfeld passed away suddenly from a stroke in 1935, and Karl completed suicide 3 years later. Some of his former collaborators at the Institute, such as Walter Grobman and Arthur Weil, continued their work in the USA. Hirschfeld himself had actually visited the United States in 1892, as we talked about, and impacted a lot of local scientists. Harry Benjamin, a friend and colleague of Hirschfeld's, further developed his studies on transsexuality in the United States. It wasn't until the 60s that this topic returned to Germany. Scientists like Alfred Kinsey employed the technique of questionnaires developed by Hirschfeld between 1899 and 1925 during his research into the sexual behavior of women and men in the U.S. Magnus was a really complicated man, who played a huge role in the gay rights movement. And it's wild to see this situation happening again, right now, in places in our country. Mm-hmm. To be super clear here, what I'm saying is that if you're against trans rights, you're on the wrong side of history. Look around at some of the historical fascists you share ideas with and wonder, are these the ideological peers that you really want?
Facts.
And that is my episode.
Damn, Katie. Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. All of these book bans and all of these bills against the trans community and just the LGBTQ community in general, like, it's erasing this history that we should know about. We're here. We've existed for such a long time.
Yeah.
Stop erasing us.
Yeah, to see people actively trying to pretend like trans identities are something that have come to fruition within the last 5 to 10 years is sickening. Mm-hmm. Just, like, truly, truly sickening. And factually
every time I
incorrect.
Hear somebody say, like, it's a trend to be gay now. Like, no, it's not a trend. And if anything, with the way that you all speak to the queer community, like, it's not trendy. It's actually terrifying to be not cis, not straight. Like, go fuck yourselves. It's actually so scary, and it's not a trend. We're just more visible because in some portions life has become more accepting towards us, and it, like, really can is. We keep it that way so that we can just fucking exist as who we are? Queer people existing does not take anything away from you. Go fuck yourselves and stop pretending like it's a fucking personal slight.
I just texted you a picture of Karl and a bunch of his friends and co-workers from the community Carl is the dude with the amazing mustache and glasses in the bottom right-hand corner, and he is holding the hand of his partner, Carl.
Oh my god. Everything about this is incredible. The Medusa headpiece? Right.
Amazing.
We'll definitely post this.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh my god. Everyone looks like they're just having, like, the most incredible time.
Right? Isn't it amazing?
And they look so close and comfortable with one another, and just like that found family aspect that has always been nurtured in the community.
Oh. Right?
You've made me tear up multiple times during this episode. Thank you for bringing us this information, Katie. It's really important.
Yes, this was all new information to me. Patrons will get a little glimpse into how this topic came to me, because it's very different from how I normally do my research. So go join Patreon if you want to know.
That'll be in our newest video coming out. After chat number 17, I think. I can't believe it's at 17 already.
Who even knows? So until next week, punch a fascist and happy
punch
Pride.
Punch Nazis.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.